Welcome to the Metaphysics of Mind Revision Podcast. So, let us start with the big question. What even is the mind? Is it just your brain? Or is there something more, something non-physical, that makes you, you? This is the central question in the metaphysics of mind, and it is one of the most fascinating areas in philosophy. Today, we are covering substance dualism and property dualism. Section 1. Substance dualism. Substance dualism is the view that minds and bodies are two fundamentally different kinds of substance. The mind is not identical to the body, and it is not identical to any part of the body, including the brain. The most famous defender of this view is René Descartes, writing in his Meditations on First Philosophy in 1641. Descartes used the Latin terms res cogitans, meaning thinking substance, for the mind, and res extensa, meaning extended substance, for the body. The body takes up space, it has physical properties, it can be measured and divided. The mind, by contrast, does not take up space. You cannot weigh a thought, you cannot cut a belief in half. Now, Descartes gave us two brilliant arguments for substance dualism. The first is the indivisibility argument. Physical things are all divisible. You can cut a brain in half, you can remove a limb, but the mind seems indivisible. You cannot split your consciousness into two separate halves. Your sense of self, your stream of awareness, is unified and whole. Therefore, the mind cannot be identical to the body or any physical part of it. They must be different substances. Examiners want to see you explain not just what the argument says, but why it supports dualism. The key move is, if mind and body had different properties, one divisible, one not, then by Leibniz's law, they cannot be the same thing. The second argument is the conceivability argument. Descartes noticed that he could conceive of himself existing without a body. He could imagine, coherently, without contradiction, that he was a purely thinking thing, with no physical form at all. He could not, however, conceive of himself existing without a mind. Therefore, mind and body are distinct substances. Now, here is a crucial exam point. Some candidates express this argument without mentioning God, but in Descartes' original formulation, God plays a role. Descartes argues that if he can clearly and distinctly conceive of mind and body as separate, and if God is not a deceiver, then they really are separate. Make sure you reference this theological element if you want full marks. Section 2. Property dualism. Property dualism is a different and more subtle position. Property dualists agree that there is only one kind of substance, the physical, but they argue that there are two fundamentally different kinds of properties, physical properties and mental properties. Mental properties, things like the redness you experience when you see a red apple, the pain you feel when you stub your toe, are not reducible to physical properties. They are something extra, something irreducible. The first major argument for property dualism is the philosophical zombies argument. Imagine a being, a philosophical zombie, that is physically identical to you in every single way. Same brain, same neural activity, same behaviour. But this zombie has no inner conscious experience. There is nothing it is like to be a zombie. It processes information, but there are no qualia, no felt qualities of experience. Now, if such a zombie is conceivable, if we can coherently imagine it without contradiction, then consciousness is not simply identical to physical processes. Because if it were, a physical duplicate would automatically have consciousness. This is the zombie argument, associated with philosophers like David Chalmers. The second argument for property dualism is the knowledge argument, also called the Mary argument, developed by Frank Jackson. Imagine Mary, a brilliant neuroscientist, who has lived her entire life in a black and white room. She has never seen colour, but she knows every single physical fact there is to know about colour vision. Now, one day, Mary leaves her room and sees a red tomato for the first time. Does she learn something new? Jackson argues yes. She learns what it is like to see red. She gains acquaintance knowledge, knowledge of the subjective, phenomenal quality of redness. This is knowledge she could not have gained from all her physical information. Therefore, physical facts do not capture everything. There are mental facts, qualia, that are irreducible to the physical. Now, here is where you need to be precise with your terminology.
qualia are defined as intrinsic, non-intentional, phenomenal properties that are introspectively accessible. Intrinsic means they are properties of the experience itself. Non-intentional means they do not point to anything beyond themselves. Phenomenal means they have a felt quality. And introspectively accessible means we know about them through inner awareness. Examiners will credit candidates who use this precise definition.
Section 3. Responses to the problem of other minds. One major challenge for any dualist is the problem of other minds. If minds are non-physical, how can I ever know that other people have minds at all? I have direct access to my own mental states, but I can only observe other people's behaviour. There are two main responses examiners expect you to know. First, the argument from analogy. I know from my own case that certain behaviours are caused by certain mental states. When I feel pain, I cry out. When I feel happy, I smile. By analogy, when I observe others crying out or smiling, I infer they too have similar mental states. The weakness is that it rests on a single case, my own, which is a very small sample for such a sweeping generalisation. The second response is the best hypothesis approach. Rather than reasoning by analogy, we treat the existence of other minds as the best explanation for the behaviour we observe. Other people act in complex, purposive, flexible ways that are best explained by positing that they have inner mental lives. This is inference to the best explanation. Make sure you can clearly distinguish these two approaches. Section 4. Objections to dualism. The first major objection is Gilbert Ryle's category mistake. Ryle argued in 1949 that substance dualists make a fundamental logical error. They treat the mind as if it were a special kind of thing, a ghost in the machine, when in fact mental terms refer to dispositions and behaviours, not a separate substance. To ask where the mind is like visiting Oxford University, seeing all the colleges and libraries and sports grounds, and then asking, but where is the university? The university is not a separate thing. It is constituted by all those buildings and activities. Similarly, the mind is not a separate substance. It is constituted by intelligent behaviour and dispositions. Now, and this is a really common mistake, the category mistake objection applies specifically to substance dualism, not property dualism. Property dualists do not claim the mind is a separate substance, so Ryle's objection does not directly hit them. Candidates who apply this objection to property dualism will not receive credit. Be precise. The second major objection is the interaction problem. This was famously raised by Princess Elizabeth of Bohemia in correspondence with Descartes himself in 1643. Her question was devastatingly simple. If the mind is non-physical and the body is physical, how on earth can they interact? How can a non-physical mind cause a physical arm to move? We can separate this into two problems. The conceptual problem. It is simply incoherent to say a non-physical thing can causally interact with a physical thing. A non-physical mind has no location, no mass, no energy, so how does it push neurons around? The empirical problem is different. Neuroscience shows us that every mental event correlates with a brain event. Damage to the brain changes mental states. Drugs alter consciousness. If the mind were truly separate from the brain, we would not expect such tight correlations. The third objection concerns epiphenomenalism. Some dualists respond to the interaction problem by saying mental events are caused by physical events, but mental events themselves cause nothing. The mind is like the whistle of a steam engine. It is produced by the physical process, but it does not drive the engine. But epiphenomenalism faces serious problems. First, if my mental states cause nothing, how can I have accurate introspective knowledge of them? Second, if consciousness has no causal power, why did it evolve? Evolution selects for traits that make a difference to survival. If consciousness makes no difference, natural selection should have eliminated it. Quickfire recall quiz. Cover your notes and answer these. Question 1. What are Descartes' two Latin terms for mind and body? Res cogitans and res extensa. Question 2. What does the indivisibility argument claim about the mind?
that the mind is indivisible, unlike the body, so they must be different substances. Question 3. Who raised the interacting problem in a letter to Descartes? Princess Elizabeth of Bohemia in 1643. Question 4. In the Mary argument, what kind of knowledge does Mary gain when she leaves the roof? Acquaintance knowledge, knowledge of what it is like to see red, which is irreducible to physical knowledge. Question 5. What is the category mistake objection, and which form of dualism does it target? Weil's objection that substance dualists wrongly treat the mind as a separate entity. It targets substance dualism, not property dualism. Summary and sign-off. To wrap up, dualism comes in two main forms. Substance dualism, championed by Descartes, says mind and body are two distinct substances. Property dualism says there is one substance, but two irreducible types of properties. The key arguments for dualism are the indivisibility argument, the conceivability argument, the philosophical zombies argument, and the Mary knowledge argument. The key objections are Ryle's category mistake, the interaction problem, both conceptual and empirical, and the challenges facing epiphenomenalism. Remember, be precise with your terminology, distinguish between the two forms of dualism, and always apply objections to the right target. Good luck in your exams. You have got this.